From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Shortly after the United States Senate voted for a second time to acquit Donald Trump, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell on Saturday delivered a speech that sounded remarkably like that of his Democratic colleagues in his condemnation of Trump. McConnell issued his most public and visceral denunciation of the former president over his incitement of his supporters to commit violent acts at the Capitol building on January 6th. But then McConnell sharply veered from Democrats in claiming that his vote to acquit Trump was done in order to protect the U.S. Constitution, because in his mind, the Senate could not vote to impeach Trump once he had left office, no matter how guilty he was. McConnell's logistical gymnastics are indicative of the disarray within the Republican Party that wants to abhor and embrace Trump and Trumpism simultaneously. But what does this mean for the U.S. Constitution and the power to impeach presidents? My guest is Corey Brettschneider, professor of political science at Brown University, the author of numerous books, including When the State Speaks, What Should It Say?, How Democracies Can Protect Expression and Promote Equality, and The Oath and the Office, A Guide to the Constitution for Future Presidents. Welcome to the program, Corey.
Thanks, Sonali. Pleasure to speak with you.
So we've spoken so often about the Constitution in the era of Trump. Well, because the Constitution has perhaps faced its greatest challenges over the past 4 years. In watching McConnell's speech, I don't know if you had the same reaction I had. I thought for a second that I was watching a Democrat or listening to a Democrat. He was he suddenly seemed to have discovered what Democrats had been saying all along since January 6th, that Trump had incited violence, directly called his supporters to attack the Capitol, and deeply endangered the democracy of the United States. And then, of course, the McConnell that we know well emerged when he somehow justified, and I'm still trying to sort it out, his vote to acquit Trump. Were you surprised by his denunciation of Trump?
I didn't think it would be that strong. I was surprised that it was so blunt and so clearly he had concluded that certainly Donald Trump, if he had been in office, would have committed a high crime and misdemeanor and would have been worthy of conviction and disqualification. But I guess part of it is that he felt the need to be so extreme because he followed up with, as you said, such an absurd conclusion at the end, a fake constitutional argument. I joined with over 100 scholars to say there was really no merit to the idea that sitting former presidents could not be impeached with the name of disqualification. And just to lay out the terrain for people, what McConnell was relying on was, to my mind, a bogus argument that said impeachment is only a process that we'll use for sitting presidents because it involves removal as an essential part of that impeachment. And so when the Constitution says that the Senate two-thirds will convict and remove, that has to be conjoined, it has to be together. And you can't separate that out the way that we were trying to, the Democrats were trying to in this trial, to have a conviction phase and then a disqualification phase. But that is just, you know, the most, to my mind, I don't know what, I don't have harsh enough words to describe it, lame, kind of overly formal approach to the Constitution. The Constitution is about values, it's about structure. And frankly, when you read it, why would the punishment of disqualification, the ability of the framers that they gave us, the ability to protect our democracy, why would it be in there if it wasn't possible to use when a president had abused the office in the last few days, as happened here?
Trump was impeached by the House while he was in office. The crime that he was accused of took place while he was in office. He was then impeached by the House. And there was a period of time, albeit a few days, that McConnell was Senate Majority Leader and had the power to help Democrats rush through a trial in the Senate while Trump was in office, but chose not to. Doesn't that expose the fact that his justification is just a made-up one?
Brilliant, yeah. I think that there's no way this is genuine, because if it was, then exactly as you said, while he was still Majority Leader, he could have said, hey, I don't think that we'll be able to finish this after he's not in office. Let's do it fast. You know, maybe he would say he didn't realize the extent of the crime, but you know, that's why I don't believe it's sincere. I also think it's common sense, frankly. Constitutional law is partly about reading the text and knowing something about the 18th century history of impeachment, but it's also about just, you know, realizing why would they put this thing in there, disqualification, if it wasn't meant to protect us against current and former presidents. So I don't think it's a serious argument.
And I want to get to the issue of disqualification and how it could still be pursued in a moment. But staying on McConnell's claim that the Constitution does not allow the Senate to try a president once he's no longer in office, doesn't that argument sort of fall flat, considering that the Senate voted on the constitutionality, before all the arguments were unveiled, the Senate voted on the constitutionality of impeaching a president once he's left office. The Senate voted, and therefore at that moment, it should have been the standing, you know, precedent that yes, you can indeed impeach, try a president, convict a president after he has left office, especially if the crime was committed while he was in office.
Yes, I mean, the Democrats tried that to divide up the arguments, to have this argument about the constitutionality of the trial first, to resolve that and then move on. And obviously, I had a feeling the whole way they were going to do this, that McConnell decided the best strategy was to just keep harping on the idea that it's unconstitutional. It really is up to the Senate. That's another thing to say in favor of your point. The sole power to try the president, to set the rules, is given to the Senate. It's not really reviewable by courts. So I think that's another argument in the favor. And also there's precedent. It's not the first time that the Senate has tried to form a former official. They have, we have precedents of them doing it in the past. So all of that amounts to saying, you know, what's he really talking about? It really comes down to one word that he's relying on, and that's that it talks about conviction and removal. And his suggestion is those two things have to go together. To my mind, as I said, it's just an overly formal, you know, very focused on the language and not at all on the idea of democracy, which after all, impeachment is meant to give us a way. They didn't give us a lot of ways to protect our democracy, but that's its point, impeachment, conviction, and disqualification.
Now, there are several pretty prominent figures that are saying, okay, even if the Senate voted to, or just didn't have enough votes to convict Trump, a majority did vote, just not a big enough majority. 57 senators to 43 voted to convict Trump. And now some are saying, including former Republican Congressman Tom Coleman, in an op-ed in the Washington Post, saying that Congress can still disqualify Trump from running again by invoking the 14th Amendment. What is this all about?
It's a fascinating history, and another place where, you know, we really have two foundings in this country, an 18th century founding, which of course is complicit with slavery. And then after the Civil War, we have a new founding, a second founding that is really meant to invigorate the Constitution by placing the idea of equal protection at the heart of it. And we do that with three amendments, the 13th Amendment ending slavery, the 14th Amendment guaranteeing equal protection of the law, and the 15th guaranteeing that there won't be discrimination when it comes to the right to vote. Sorry for the history lesson, but the point is very relevant because part of what they did is that they gave enforcement mechanisms to the Congress, to empower the Congress to protect our democracy. And in the 14th Amendment, they not only gave us a right of equal protection, they also provided a right of a Congress to fight back against, frankly, white supremacists who were from the Confederacy coming back and challenging that democracy. And Section 3 of the 14th Amendment says that in instances in which a person is given comfort, that's the word that's used there, to insurrectionists, sounds familiar, right? And when the Constitution doesn't specify a voting procedure, that it's majority. So it's majority rule in that case.
So the Democrats could actually take this path forward, and we can maybe talk in a minute about whether they will. They had one other chance to sort of push aggressively over the weekend when the trial was taking place, and that was the call for witnesses. At first, it wasn't clear if they would in fact even vote to have witnesses. They voted, and then the Democrats decided not to use the power given to them. Many have suggested that calling in witnesses, you know, the victims of the survivors of the January 6th riot would have been helpful. Of course, These are people, you know, the members, the Senate themselves, if you will, are witnesses to what happened January 6th. So what exactly do you think needs, you know, could the Democrats have done?
I don't know that it would have made a difference in the vote. I think that the brute reality is that if you're going to rely on this lame argument, the facts don't matter. And what it was, the lame argument being this idea that you can't try in the Senate a former president. The advantage to them, the cynical reason I think they used it, is because it doesn't require a factual inquiry. All of a sudden, the facts are irrelevant. So I think the decision was made. I heard the one of the managers on the Daily saying that, you know, they weren't going to vote for this based on more witnesses. We had already made our case. It was so powerful. And if they were going to vote against it, let history decide. And I thought that was a nice way to put it. There's no way they were going to get McConnell. They weren't going to get another 10 votes, even with the evidence of Trump's phone call, you know, basically saying at least these people are doing something to the House Minority Leader. I think it probably was the right way to go. It was so powerful. It was so well done. And let's let history have that moment. And also let's pursue this next path, which is thinking about using the third section of the 14th Amendment. And certainly here, the facts will matter. Congress has the power to do this. It seems to fit. And the more the facts come out, the more evidence I think that Congress should use this 14-3 power, the third section of the 14th Amendment.
Do Democrats need Republican votes to make this happen?
No. I mean, that's the amazing thing about it, that the Constitution, when it specifies a voting procedure of two-thirds, obviously that's not just a majority, but here, legislation, for instance, could be passed by both houses of Congress and signed by the president pursuant to the Congress's 14th Amendment, Section 3 power to basically disqualify for office anyone involved in this insurrection. And that can include Donald Trump. And I think actually that is what they should do. I'll just say very bluntly.
And one wonders if those seven Republicans in the Senate and something like 10 or 11 Republicans in the House would join Democrats in pursuing this path. Because, of course, if it's just Democrats doing this with their slim majorities in the House and the Senate, one can imagine it being dismissed as just a partisan exercise.
Yes. And, you know, I think that there is this power. Anybody can read it for themselves, the third section of the 14th Amendment. So it would be dubious to claim it's not there. I think it's just there in plain day. The history matches exactly what we're facing here to the degree that we're talking about white supremacists and insurrection, the same almost set of facts, you know, more than 100 years later. I would think if you voted, if those seven Republicans in the Senate, for instance, and those members of the House, including Representative Cheney, voted to say that he was guilty of this insurrection, the same logic suggests that you should use this power to stop a president from running again. Now, this has never been done before, so people will say it's unprecedented. Of course it's unprecedented. We've never had an instance in which a president has inspired an insurrection in which violent white supremacists took over the Capitol. And thankfully, the framers of the 14th Amendment thought about this instance and gave us the tools to fight back against such a person.
So when we are looking forward to the Republican Party, what do you think McConnell is going to end up, you know, facing? Because those senators who did bravely vote to convict Trump are facing very severe consequences. You know, the Republican Party is happy to tolerate Klan members and white supremacists in its ranks, but will treat anybody who steps against Trump as worse than that. We're seeing Senator Richard Burr facing consequences, Pat Toomey and Susan Collins. Their state GOP parties are holding their feet to the fire for daring to hold Trump accountable. Meanwhile, you have McConnell, who gave a speech far stronger than any of these, but then, of course, is trying to have it both ways by voting to acquit Trump. And I'm wondering if he thinks that that's going to protect him from Trump's base and, you know, in the party and outside the party.
Look, there's a war going on in the Republican Party between white supremacists who favor insurrection and, I mean, let's put it in the starkest terms. They're an anti-democratic party in the sense that they don't believe in constitutional democracy. They don't believe in the rule of law. They believe in one person, Trump, that's completely at odds with our system of government. And I talked about my piece in Politico when we first met, I think in 2016, Trump versus the Constitution. We're still in that position, except now it's the Republican Party against the Constitution, unless this minority group who did vote to convict can stand up for themselves and not cave in. And let's just, you know, be as harsh as we can towards those who didn't vote to convict. These are people who know that they're doing wrong. Josh Hawley, a graduate of Yale Law School, knows the Constitution. They're trying to save their seats to advance their political career. It is craven. And to have people of that party putting themselves and their narrow careers, their jobs, above the interest of our constitutional democracy, that party doesn't deserve to survive if these people win out. And those who are resisting, I wish them the best of luck.
It's remarkable that 75% of Republicans surveyed still want Trump to feature, to take a prominent role in the party's future. That may sound like a lot, but I don't know if that's accounting for the fact that hundreds of thousands of Republicans have left the party since January 6th. That entire base is shrinking. There was at least one article pointing out that nationwide, and this was as of a week ago, 140,000 registered Republicans had taken the step of leaving their party. I mean, they didn't even wait till the next election to change registration. They actively changed their registration after January 6th, which suggests that when you see these numbers about Republicans, a majority of Republicans want this or that, the Republican Party as a whole and its base is a smaller and smaller fraction of the electorate as a whole, I imagine.
That's true. And that gives me some comfort that most of America is rejecting this man and seeing him for the threat to constitutional democracy that he is. But the fact is, we have a two-party system. So even though they've shrunk and are becoming increasingly a party of white supremacy with a small minority resisting, that's enormously dangerous. Because the truth is, once you get the nomination for the presidency, you still have a great chance of winning, given our twisted electoral college. And if we don't get rid of it before that election, it's unlikely that we will. Trump still poses a very serious threat to the entire country. I'll add too, I mean, I'm sorry to be so negative about the possibilities here, but even if he doesn't win, he could start, well, a civil war, telling his supporters that he really has the right to the office. And next time it might be much worse. And, you know, those of us who were talking about him as a fascist and authoritarian threat to democracy, we weren't exaggerating, and I think we see that now.
What about, finally, Corey, what about the impact to the Constitution? As somebody who studies this issue, do you feel that the last 4 years have challenged the Constitution's strength and its basis of our democracy, like, you know, in a way that we haven't seen either in recent times or maybe ever?
It's been disappointing from the standpoint of how it's supposed to function. The purpose of impeachment is to stop a president like this who tries to bring about an insurrection. And twice we failed to do that, even though you and I and others have been talking about the importance of holding him to account. The Congress obviously didn't do that. And so impeachment, I think we have to recognize, despite, you know, having historic numbers voting to convict, it didn't work. The Supreme Court was supposed to stop the travel ban, clearly unconstitutional, to stop the use of the illegitimate emergency to build the wall. They didn't do that in the clearest terms that they should have. No, it hasn't worked as well as I hoped to when I first wrote my piece and when I wrote my book. But the thing that I think gives me solace is that Americans as a whole, the citizenry, is taking the Constitution into their own hands. And we did that when we defeated Donald Trump at the polls. And I think we've got to continue to do that. It's really up to us, and there is no other solution here.
And then also briefly, the Democrats, in terms of what they need to make the, you know, sort of, because it's apparently just up to them now to ensure that the Constitution is protected from somebody like Trump in the future. They could certainly make this issue front and center by invoking the 14th Amendment. And then there's also, I believe it's H.R. 1, this very important law that is a pretty large and comprehensive set of rights that buttresses and strengthens voting rights and really helps to set the stage for strengthening our democracy. People have pointed out, if you can't even get 17 Republicans to join you in convicting the most, you know, obviously guilty president in memory, you're not going to get 10 Republicans to join you in passing legislation. So use your power in any way you can to push through the legislation that you want to push through. It, after all, it is what the Republicans would do were they in the place of Democrats.
Yes. And, you know, I maybe spoke too fast by saying it's just a matter of elections. It's, I think that's the ultimate failsafe, but it's also essential that we use legislation. And a lot of these guarantees can be passed through ordinary law. So certainly the new Voting Rights Act that you mentioned, the Supreme Court really decimated voting rights, basically took away the role of the Department of Justice in policing districts that have a history of racist behavior towards Black voters. We need to put those protections back and add to them. We also need to basically reform the presidency, and this isn't going to fly with a lot of Democrats who want to see Biden unencumbered. But I think that, you know, making clear, for instance, that the person who's investigating criminal wrongdoing by the president doesn't work for the president, can't be fired by the president. In other words, the recreation of an independent counsel law, which disappeared during the Clinton era, we need that. And why do we need it? Because we have to assume not just that Trump might come back, we have to think as though he will come back. And we have to put in place as many of the protections as we can to guard our democracy if he does succeed in winning the election in 4 years, or anyone like him. Josh Hawley, Ted Cruz, any of these people will pose a threat to democracy, in my view, and we need to defend democracy through legislation that reforms the presidency.
Corey, I want to thank you so much for joining us, as always. Really appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Always a pleasure to speak, and glad to speak to you in the post-Trump era.
That's true. My guest has been Corey Brettschneider. He's a professor of political science at Brown University. He's the author of numerous books, including The Oath and the Office, A Guide to the Constitution for Future Presidents, and many others. We've been discussing the second acquittal of Donald Trump. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.